Greetings, friends. My name is Jessa McLean, and I'm here to provide you with some blueprints of disruption. This weekly podcast is dedicated to amplifying the work of activists, examining power structures, and sharing the success stories from the grassroots. Through these discussions, we hope to provide folks with the tools and the inspiration they need to start to dismantle capitalism, decolonize our spaces, and bring about the political revolution that we know we need. Welcome for try number two, Carrie. Can you introduce yourself to the audience?
Hello, my name is Carrie Claire Neal. I'm co-chair for the Social Justice Cooperative in Newfoundland, Labrador, calling in from St. John's, Newfoundland, Labrador, also known as Iqdamgook.
The Social Justice Co-op, according to your Twitter, this is a member-owned, nonprofit, anti-capitalist grassroots organization. That has a lot to unpack. It's at, like, at first glance, you're like, oh, I can kind of picture what you guys probably get up to. We'll talk about that details. But what's it mean to be a member-owned nonprofit, especially when you're talking about social justice? I thought, you know, that kind of piqued my interest there.
Yeah, I think we're the only advocacy, not a cooperative incorporated in the province. And I don't hear about a lot of them in like other places in Canada. But it's a really cool model. I mean, I think, you know, we're familiar with like worker-owned co-ops, housing co-ops. I think it is like a very kind of anarchist model in itself, because it's kind of like everyone has a share in, you know, the organization, and everyone has like one member, one vote. So everyone is like kind of equal. It's not like a corporation where some people have more shares, so they have more say. And generally members like don't get like dividends, like the profits would go back into the cooperative in different ways, maybe like, yeah, increasing people's salaries of a worker co-op, or with housing, like I think it would go into repair. But yeah, I guess as a nonprofit, we don't have profit, but our money is kind of collectively decided by our members who like vote for our board. And we definitely like take the extra mile to like bring members in on a lot of our financial decisions, and just different ways like how we govern ourselves. And there are like, because we're cooperative, there are specific like rules about like how many people you need a member to change the official rule, or that kind of thing. It's, I think a very democratic and equitable way to organize.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about that a little bit later, because I want to know how you came about to getting into this type of organizing. Because looking through your history, it's eclectic in terms of political activism. You've run for the NDP, and you've sat on boards, which are far more formal institutions typically. Did this come from a reaction to that experience, or were you always doing this alongside the more institutional political work?
Yeah, I guess like when I was a young 20-something, I started in activism, kind of like trying to get more women into like playing punk music. Like I was going to a lot of music shows, and it was a lot of like men in the stage and women in the audience. And then I was like really, yeah, interested in like, I started getting into like feminist activism and using my voice more, like getting more on Twitter and, you know, raising concerns about like the oil and gas here in the province. And I ended up actually losing a job that I got in a nonprofit that like helped women get into the trade sector because of like tweets I was making about like politicians and the oil and gas industry and like its impact on climate and, you know, corruption. And yeah. And I was like very public about that. I kind of made this like, it was quite a moment of like, okay, do I like be quiet and just like stop using this and like kind of just like become a career oriented person, or do I go public about like what just happened to me and just like kind of lean into it? And I decided to like lean in, and it just so happened there was a by-election happening like near where I lived, and the NDP were kind of like, hey, we're looking for a candidate, looks like you don't have a job. And I was kind of like, I had my tippy toes in there, but I decided to go for it. And I ended up running against two of like the richest men in the province. And because it was a by-election, there was a lot of attention on it. So there was like all these debates, and it was
that provincially?
Yeah.
It's always interesting playing against the big players, eh? Like the campaigns must have been starkly different. I find it interesting, though, you kind of get in a little bit of social media hot water and the NDP come to you, because we've heard like many stories, and I know you've had your own experience with them not being particularly fond of people who stir the pot. And I'm reading an article in which you're explaining why you're running for the NDP. And part of it, one of your quotes there, it was, you know, you weren't doing the wrong thing. You were simply working for the wrong organization. And I can't help but cringe, and I'm sure you do, looking back on that, that clearly the NDP isn't the right organization for you either. But we learn. And then we organize like anarchists, I suppose, is the natural cycle of that experience. But yeah, reading back on that, I just wanted to maybe allow you to reflect on trying to find a space where you could act in ways that you thought were appropriate, that were meaningful.
Yeah, the NDP, like, don't want anything to do with me anymore. They have like blocked me on Twitter. They totally think they have to distance themselves from me as much as possible, because I guess like the more, I think I was always saying pretty radical things, but like I guess as my Twitter following has like grown, I get a lot more like attention on like the things that I say. So there have been a few things that have kind of like gone viral that don't, you know, liberals don't necessarily like,
fuck the police, the lines, right? Was one of them. Yeah,
exactly. Mostly. Yeah. About cops and like having, you know, images of like cop cars on fire and yeah.
Totally appropriate.
You know,
I'm serious. Don't
maybe I haven't always used like the most, the nicest, times, I guess a cop died and it was being shared with this like blue line symbol, and I responded with fuck the police, and that did not go over well.
I mean, you could have put
and that's
cab.
How I got kicked off
it
the board of regents. Yeah, but yeah, after I ran for the NDP, I guess the Social Justice Co-op was looking to hire someone, and that's kind of when I got involved in that org.
So people keep finding you when you're kind of in trouble. They're like, ooh, yeah. I like that, right? It's not always a deterrent. The right people found you. So now you're co-chair over there. And do you folks organize a lot around defunding the police?
We have definitely, over the years, I guess, we do a lot of different organizing. We've supported, like, Cancel Canada Day events. We are doing like a prison pen pal project where we try and like build relationships with people in prison. And I would say right now we're doing a tent city for change. We're involved with a collective that's helping people living in tents in our city. And that is a very like harm reduction ACAB, because I mean, we're constantly dealing with the police and seeing how they're treating people and showing up, I guess, at protests where police presence is really strong. Like today, a few of us went down in support of the crab harvesters, where there's like, police and like SWAT teams, big guns, they had the batons, and like no one at the protest had weapons, you know?
I think it's a pretty good sign of that you're doing the right kind of trouble when you end up confronting the police. That's a pretty good barometer for that. I got to be honest. I have very little idea in my head when I think of even just the Atlantic in general. What it's like there. But I guess how What's the environment kind of like when talking about these kind of cultural things like ACAB and all of these things? Is like, how receptive are people there, I guess? I honestly have no clue.
It's funny, like, the establishment, of course, is all about the police. But I do think a lot of people, like, don't like the police. Like, there was an article that went around about a year ago kind of encouraging people to call the police more. It was, like, this, like RNC campaign. And, like, all of the comments were just, like, people complaining about times when they called the police and they didn't do anything. just how, like, incompetent they are and, like, useless. And I do think, like, in rural areas, like, people have kind of aren't super trusting of the police. It's
it really can be that one issue that we should all be able to relate on. But other than ACAB then, because obviously all cops are bastards everywhere, what about other kinds of politics? Can you lay the groundwork for folks who aren't familiar with Newfoundland politics? Is it generally conservative? Was your election always going to be an uphill battle regardless of the budget constraints of running against two rich, presumably white men?
I think there's a lot of cronyism here. Like, the Liberals, we have Liberals and PCs, our progressive conservatives are, like, our two main parties. And it's, you know, it's very much like they're the same party. Whenever one's in power, they, you know, they do the same thing. Like, tax cuts for the rich and, like, a lot of money going to, like, massive corporations who take them out to fancy dinners. The oil and gas industry is, like, very important to our province. We have our own offshore oil, but also, like, a lot of people work over in Alberta. And for a long time, we, like, hated conservatives federally because, like, of some stuff that happened under Harper. But we're definitely, like, we just elected our first federal conservative in the last election and in a long time. And, like, people are expecting, like, more of that is going to happen. St. John's was a stronghold, like, for NDP for a long time, like, federally. And there's a couple seats. Right now, we have one provincial seat in the city that's NDP and two in Labrador, which is kind of cool. There's only, like, 5 seats in Labrador.
You describe your organizing as anti-capitalist. And you've described, you know, talking about tent city, organizing around maybe not prison abolition, but the harm reduction factor there. Is that a consensus among your collective? Would you all label yourselves as anti-capitalists? And is that a hard sell in Newfoundland?
That's a great question. We do have this, like, Revolution of Care manifesto that kind of, like, directly names capitalism as the, you know, big kind of that makes us sick and is kind of dividing us, and, you know, we need to take care of each other, and, you know, have more co-ops and work together, yeah, have different economies that are more, yeah, thinking about more about the environment and each other. But we're also trying to be really decentralized, and we do, like, a lot of different things. Like, we advocate for, like, sidewalk snow clearing, and we're out on the streets supporting Palestine, and we have a book club, and I think we're trying to hopefully bring people in on a lot of issues, and we're not, like, you have to be anti-capitalist to join. But definitely I think enough people in the space are anti-capitalist generally that I think it opens people up more to the idea that, you know, the way that we're organizing this economy around, like, profit extraction and destroying the environment is, like, not helpful.
Okay. I have a question, 'cause we just interviewed someone from an anarchist collective. And one of the staying points with me was the practice of truly listening to everybody's voice and allowing them to take action as they feel comfortable, as they feel is effective, that is meaningful to them. Is that how you came about doing so many things? You probably just named a fraction, because I will link people to your link tree, which is extensive. And, you know, I'm asking you, are you involved in this and that before we started? Activist Film Collection, Mutual Aid, the Black Mutual Aid Fund, and all the other things that you've already mentioned. So are these kind of visions of all of your members and you just allow that? Yes, go for it. You know, book club, sure, start it. You know, without having to all come to a consensus on each one of these activities or even requiring the labor of each one of your members.
Absolutely. We, yeah, kind of consider ourselves like an activist incubator. So like if you're really passionate about something and you want support, like we're here to help. And as long as it kind of like broadly aligns with our values, we do have some consideration about like, yeah, who we're supporting and how. But I kind of believe that capitalism is such a massive, you know, it's in every part of our life. And we need to like, there are a lot of different ways that we can tear it down. And sometimes we need to think about like really immediate things, getting people food when they're living out in the streets. And then, yeah, sometimes we're thinking about really long-term things like climate change and how do we, you know, elect different people, or how do we get people more willing to try direct action in different ways? And how do we just build community where we have enough trust that we could take things a step further? So we also do a lot of like socializing as part of our movement.
This kind of sounds like the dream to me. Like this is like what you guys are doing here. It checks off so many boxes of things that we need, you know? And honestly, I wish that more communities had organizations like this, because this kind of sounds quite like the blueprint of the work that needs to be done. I guess, because you mentioned like when you joined it already had been around, right? Can you tell me a bit about like what you've learned of like, what were the early days of this? Like, how did this get started? How did it get off the ground?
This was my comic book reference. We need the origin story.
Well, thank you. That was very kind. I definitely feel good about the strategies that we have. The SJC has a really interesting history. It was originally came from out of Oxfam, like way back in the 60s. People got second mortgages on their homes and bought this building and were we need to do organizing that, I guess, connects what's happening locally with what's happening globally. So we're really interested in making those connections and advocating in the province. And then in the 2000s under Harper, there were some rules around what Oxfam could do as a charity. Like they couldn't do as much political advocacy. So they lost the money and pulled out of Newfoundland. And
Oxfam did. Is that what you're saying?
Oxfam pulled out because they owned the building and I guess they had staff, so everyone got laid off, and the building was sold to Oxfam Canada with this idea that they'd have to sell back to it for a dollar to a like-minded organization if they ever pulled out of the region. So the Social Justice Co-op was formed in 2010, and officially incorporated in 2013 to take over that building and kind of continue that organizing under a new name. And during that negotiation, the building burned down, tragically. But Oxfam Canada did give some insurance money, $50,000 to the SJC, which is an amazing little pot of gold that really helped the organization to hire a staff and be independent, because we don't rely on government funding, which makes it a lot easier for us to have that voice. We do take this for certain projects, but our core funding is all member driven. We do monthly, we encourage our members and allies to do monthly donations, and that pays for our staff and our core operations.
You were talking about being an incubator earlier, and I wanted to ask you, who wouldn't you support? Because, and that, like, it's can be a funny question and some obvious answers, perhaps. But again, I'm going back to the discussion we most recently had and the need that you mentioned to bring in as many people as possible. But there has to be a line. And I kind of wanted to ask that of our previous guest when we're talking about doing that and including like all voices, because the solution has to be a collective of ideas. But, you know, how do you maintain a safe space for the people that you've already brought in that you need to thrive without being too exclusive?
Yeah, it's something that we've been talking about a lot. Like right now in book club, we're reading Let This Radicalize You by Kelly Hayes and Miriam Pavey. And they kind of talk about like you have to build a movement, not a clubhouse. So it's okay to organize with people that you don't agree with. But I think there also has to be a line in like if you're advocating to like harm some of the people that we're organizing with, then they're not in a safe space anymore. So we have kind of bumped heads with people who are been involved in like trucker convoy style organizing and kind of concerned about, you know, the way that they're framing trans people. So as an example, so I think that would be, that's a tricky, like, so far we have excluded people that we know to be in the convoy from our circles. Because some of them have been showing up to Tent City for like, and it's been an interesting of like, should we work? Like if they're showing up bringing food and helping clean up, like that's great. But should we work with them? But then they're also like saying mean things about us. So we're kind of just like trying to not, like we've taken the strategy of just like not really talking to them and like letting them do their own thing and not engaging, I guess. And keeping them out of our core circles, yeah.
That's tough, especially when you see coalescing around certain issues, like defunding the police, perhaps, because of the experiences that they're all having, and things like Tent City. Of course, not all aid is equal when it comes to folks helping the unhoused community. We know that, right? Like, some don't go in with the right motives at all. But, yeah, it's just a question I wanted to pose when that is the approach, right? Eventually we do have to bring everybody along. So how we best do that would from the anarchist perspective, I suppose, but finding that balance as well, right? So that we can maintain safe spaces. I know some people roll their eyes when I use that phrase, but it's important because that's how you get every voice. And I'm going through, I warned you, I was going to go through like your meeting guidelines. I'm telling you, everything you need to know is like on their link tree, including like the many different organizations in and around Newfoundland, St. John's specifically, but it's really eclectic. And yeah, so I'm on there and I'm trying to figure out how you guys might do things differently. And it's interesting, folks should, I'll link specifically to that because we're talking about it, but you have mechanisms written in, things like the 10-second rule and reminding people that silence is okay. And the 10-second rule is, let's say you're the person that always talks, like me, right? I always have a question. I always could contribute, should I? Let me wait 10 seconds and see if anybody else has something to say. Because not everybody is comfortable being the first person. It takes a few seconds for people to build up the courage to speak. So you just remind people, silence is okay. We can sit here staring at each other for a few minutes until a light bulb goes off. Like a real one, not just to fill the space. Because how many meetings have you been in where people are really just regurgitating what someone else has already said or simply just agreeing, like standing up to take up space to agree. And it's nice when people agree with you, but it's also like maybe some tension is needed. You know, maybe you don't need a cheering section. You need somebody to just sit there for a minute and come up with a different idea. But yeah, do you think, and are there any other things that you folks do that you think have helped you create an environment where so many different ideas come up and are encouraged and then acted on? You know, they're not just, it's not just a think tank. You're turning a lot of these into action, which means people are coming up with ideas and then other people are volunteering their time to make it happen. So you guys are doing something right. And it starts sometimes in those meetings.
Yeah, I would say meetings are like 80% of what we do. I'm sure a lot of organizers feel that. And being really mindful about like making it an enjoyable is something that we've yet put a lot into. I would say like when we started a meeting with a check-in circle, so we go around like on Zoom, like we might go alphabetically so folks know like where they are in the circle. And kind of say like, you know, what are your names, your pronouns, and how are you feeling coming into the meeting? And maybe there's like an icebreaker question. What was the last protest you went to? And that, some people don't like that. They're like, oh, we're spending all of this time wasted when we could be talking about the action items. And it's like, but that's actually really important to like understanding, like knowing each other, where we're all coming from. How much capacity we have right now to like be involved, and you know, what's bothering them or like what's on their mind. And we also do like a checkout circle. So at the end, we kind of say like, how did you feel about the meeting? Were there any like actions that you're, planning to take on or need some support with? And I think those like relational pieces, I think are often missed. I went to a meeting like a couple years ago organized by some union, and they were going to kind of do like a Green New Deal for Newfoundland. It was like a people's deal. I can't remember what it was called, but 60 people in the room and they, no introductions. Like, and you know, how can you share ideas if you're not like taking that time to be like, oh, hi, this is me. Like, that's where I'm coming from.
I wonder if some of those are even designed to get your input.
You know?
Yeah. It's something that people forget a lot, is that the importance of building your organizing spaces into communities, right? Like, it's more than about just the business end of things, you know? It's the relationships, the interpersonal relationships. That's part of it. That's part of the movement. And that's how you build something that's going to last, be successful. Like, I've seen I've been part of organizations that, you know, very much don't do that. And people, I find very quickly, you know, find that they don't really have a voice in there. They don't feel comfortable contributing, communicating, and they end up leaving pretty quickly. You know, they start thinking, why, it's not even worth it for me to show up to this. And do they even really need me here? Does my presence do anything other than count as a number of how many people were here? No, so I'm gone. And so building that kind of environment is crucial.
Absolutely. And then everyone has ownership too. If it's the book club was their idea, even if they don't completely execute it on their own or even at all, right? Like, you don't necessarily have to be the person to do it, to come up with the idea. Although you should be willing to do some of the work. But there's ownership and pride rather than just taking orders or having a model of activism that you just kind of want people to step into and fill that role. And, you know, it's like a formula. A lot of organizations you walk into, it's this formula. There's almost a ladder you can see, maybe not of power, but of progression. And it just feels really stifling. It just feels like we're mimicking some of the institutions sometimes that we don't want to, that we've railed against, but we just don't know another way of doing it. So I love that our interview actually got delayed until we had the discussion with the anarchist. Because I think it set the stage for just understanding a different design, especially for small community groups. Well, I don't know. How big are you? How big is your organization?
It's pretty small. I mean, I guess we have like 200 members, official like shareholding members.
I'm sorry, pretty small.
St. John's, Newfoundland. We're not. So, what is the 200
members?
Is
like, I'm so fantastic for really like. I'm in Toronto, you know. Like, there's not that many organizations that get up to those numbers, and we have a lot more people here. You know, 200. That's honestly incredible.
That's a good perspective to have. <'cause sometimes laughs> I mean, not everyone is like super active, you know, you get a membership for life kind of thing. And right now we're raising like $25,000 a year. We did just have like all of our money stolen. But
sorry, what?
We have recovered. Yeah, about a year ago, I should say.
Well, who's asked treasurer, we have to kick? Do we know who stole your money?
Yes. Someone that we really trusted. They were our treasurer. They were on the board. They came to every meeting, our birthdays. Yeah, over 2 years.
I am so sorry, because that must have hurt, honestly.
Yeah. It was a real wake-up call. Like, I think, I've been on the board, and I was so focused on, like, the activism part of it, and not... We didn't do good oversight on the financial side of it, and really like trusted this person who was kind of in a financial, facing their own financial issues. And I guess like the temptation was there, and, you know, they were presenting treasurer's reports and everything, but like we weren't looking at the bank statements. And yeah, finally, like we did discover it. It definitely like was really intense. Like that decision about like, do we go to the police was really hard. And we decided not to, because we didn't believe that it like went by our values. But like a lot of members who maybe haven't been with us for every, you know, defund the police action kind of came out of the woodwork and were like, what do you mean you're not going to the police?
I can see that. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but actually, I think being a cooperative kind of also helped us in that moment, because we were able to put forward a plan that our members were able to like give input on and vote on. And I think we like had a series of membership meetings, and like we were really transparent. Like, we haven't shared everything publicly yet. We are hoping to like put out a fraud investigation report by the summer. But we were really transparent with our members and let them also talk about, like, you know, what they thought was going to happen. And thankfully, the ACABers in the group had really strong voices and were really passionate. And we were able to put together a Transformative Justice Committee who are kind of helping us now, like, through that process.
I absolutely love this moment, even though it was the last thing I wanted to hear, because you want to be able to trust anyone that comes forward and is willing to do the work. I'm a real believer in that. But oversight, you know, lesson learned there. But to not go to the police, to practice what you preach, that's so important. And it wasn't that you just didn't go to the police as a matter of principle either. You provided an alternative model for people to follow next time. Hopefully there's no next time like that. But in their lives, in their conflict resolution, and how they can envision a world without police intervention for everything. So, because I imagine the temptation, we're all raised to be like, no, you wronged me, bad guys, call the cops. It's very inherent in how most people are raised. And so, and then when you're personally wronged, we often quite see people, even though they will take the stand of defund the police, they'll call the police or they'll cheer them on as a solution. And, you know, we've talked about that before. That simply just reinforces the ideology that you spend so much time trying to break down. And I don't think there's any truer way to reinforce it than to be that example. Because some people scramble to even envision, like, what is that going to look like? What do we do if we don't call the cops? You just let her go? Like, you know, and it's, there are mm-hmm. other ways to kind of work through the problem.
Plus, additionally, it's a testament to the strength of your group. That kind of thing can really... tear a group apart, you know, the fact that you came out on the other side of it and, you know, you're still here, you're still doing the work, that in and of itself says a lot about, you know, the dynamics that have been fostered there.
Yeah, definitely. Like, when we were going through it, I was like, do we just, like, yeah, close this, start fresh. And then I was like, you know what? Like, we've already built so much. We're going to have to put in better financial oversight policies than any other thing that we do. Like, we kind of just have to, like, keep moving. You know, we survived the building burning down. We can survive having all our money stolen. And, like, we, like, incredibly, a lot of our monthly donors, like, did not leave us. And so after just, I think, 8 months, we were able to hire back our staff at the same salary. And having staff is so important to our organization. And I just feel so lucky that, like, it does feel like we're bouncing back, and that people, like, trusted us to, like, figure it out and trusted the plan that we put forward. It was, like, really hard, even on the board. Like, not everyone was ACAB, and, you know, people thought, like, oh, like, you have, it's in the law that you have to go to the police if someone steals from you. And it's like, well, actually, it's not, like, that is a choice. And we did meet with lawyers, and they were like, you know, you're probably not going to get your money back, even if you went that route. And you're going to have to spend, like, years going through that route. And, you know, are we as going to be motivated to do that? Like, are we going to force our members to go through that? Like, no. Like, and thankfully, like, actually, in our book club, we were doing a lot of prison abolition reading. And some of our members started a transformative justice working group probably a year before it happened, just to kind of start thinking through, like, how do we resolve conflict outside of police? So, like, thankfully, we also had that, like, people in place who were like, I'm not an expert on this, but I'm willing to talk to experts. And the NL Human Rights Council here also just got funding for a restorative justice worker, like, people who were, yeah, supporting restorative justice and teaching people about it. So we were able to, like, lean on that. And yeah, I think having that in place already really made it seem for people, like, more possible that we could do this without the police.
I meant to bring this up earlier, and now we're talking about police again. But just recently a video went around from yesterday. So the same thing you went to earlier today, but clearly a little more heated, where police were using horses and backing them up into fishermen. I guess the fishermen were there. They had, although that is interesting, ACAB, worthy of discussion, and we can. I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the action itself that we didn't get into, because I was telling you, we don't get that a lot. Our farmers rarely come up to protest anything anymore. It's been a very, very long time here in Ontario. And I cannot remember the last time there was a decent effort to shut down the proceedings happening inside the legislature. Even when we know the most damaging things are coming down the pipe and rallies have happened, never has a circle been formed. Never have exits and entrances been blocked. Like, not a long time. You might have to go back to the Harris Days of Action 20 odd years ago or more now, maybe 30. Ugh. And what are you laughing at, Santiago? Better don't you dare. But I thought that was, and I'm not even sure what they're protesting, so I don't know if I support them or not. But and you're down there, you seem to, but besides that, they're trying to stop the budget from happening, right? There's something in the budget that they're not happy about, and they are stopping the politicians from physically getting in the building so that they can't pass the budget. Does that happen a lot down in Newfoundland? Because that's impressive.
It was, yeah, quite something. I wouldn't say it happens a lot. I don't think I've seen anything like that in the past 20 years here either. But yeah, harvesters from all across the province drove in like huge numbers. I don't think the government saw it at all. It wasn't really about the budget, but I guess they realized, you know, it's an important day for government and they're going to be pissed if we show up and block the entrances today. Like, they showed up at dawn.
They'll care today if we block the other day. They're probably not even here working, but okay, I get it. We know where they're going to be.
And yeah, stop people from getting in. And I think it actually, like, the whole horse thing, I think, also comes from like people actually not being well trained in protest management, because I think
you
that was
police?
Like the police
or like marshals.
Yeah, the
for
police,
the fish harvesters. Okay.
They don't have marshals.
These folks didn't have marshals. Like, you should have seen them, Santiago. Have you seen the video? The horse is backing into them, and the guy's taking his coat and, you know, like, get back.
I was worried that that horse was going to do, like, a back kick or something.
Well, some people did get hurt, and one of the shots in the articles I'll link is, you know, the only people leaving the rally are the injured. And, you know, there were some, and these are not, like, young folks. These are older gentlemen. It was just things we don't experience here in Ontario. And I guess, yeah, it's a little bit unique in Newfoundland, but their determination and their willingness to not back down was admirable, whatever their cause, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And now the police are charging the people who hit the horse, which is kind of like, you know, ramming your car into a crowd and saying, oh, you know, you scratched it. Like, you know, I think people have a right to...
Face first, butt first, like, and that's particularly dangerous. Oh dear. Mm-hmm. All cops will charge anybody these days. Side note, the protester that they arrested, not the protester, the picketer for QP3903 that we talked about this before, there were no charges. There was nothing to charge them with. And so we're seeing this over and over again. Like, they may arrest them and charge them, but I doubt that will actually go to trial, because it would be absolutely ridiculous. But it's just a real trend of police throwing charges during these moments at protesters and organizers and trying to shut these down with horses. We've seen more and more use of that in Toronto as a response as well. And it's, you know, it's something you got to prepare your members for going out there. But yeah, it's a worrying trend for sure. Other than fish harvesters shutting down the Confederate building, is there any other unique factors, you think, to organizing in Newfoundland, perhaps, other than the obscene level of snow you guys get? But that's not really funny, because that must impact Tent City. You mentioned that on Twitter, and I was like, what are you worried about? And she was like, snow. Snow is, you know, was a huge barrier there.
Yeah. We were really concerned about, you know, people freezing to death this winter. We've made it through. It's spring, and everyone has been okay. And yeah, I mean, Tent City is interesting because there are a lot of shelter spaces in the city, but a lot of them are kind of dirty, dangerous, degrading, and people are protesting against them. So we're, yeah, supporting that protest and people's right to resist these like really awful options. And I think it's been really eye-opening for a lot of people in this province. Like, I think government kind of assumes like the poor are going to be quiet and not speak out against the oppression that they're facing, because they're like these are people who are like very, very, very low income. And like seeing the community support that's come around, I don't think a lot of people realize how bad it was, and I have been really educated, and we are seeing like a lot of, all of a sudden government has money to like build homes and repair. Like, that was a huge thing. There were like hundreds of government-owned housing that were just in disrepair, and some of them just needed like a paint job before they could like let someone in, but they were just like not putting money into it. And now they are funding all these like housing support workers and these different nonprofits, and seem to, I think because of the protest and the public support for the protest, they are taking it like a lot more seriously. I think that is like one of the unique things about Newfoundland, is like, we do have like a bit of a big city, like 100,000, 150,000 St. John's, maybe 200,000 kind of surrounding area. But it is still small. Like, you still kind of get to know each other, and especially around the bay, like there's the sense of camaraderie and community, and people are really trying to like hold on to that. And so I think people are willing to support each other. Like, we are getting that, like, Alberta influence of, like, especially young men are, like, going out and, like, making a lot of money and, like, I don't need anyone else. I can just take care of myself. But I think generally where we've been, especially, like, a poor province, too, for a long time, like, people are more willing to, like, look out for each other. And so that is definitely, like, something that we're trying to, like, foster and support.
One question I have is, how is it that, how do people stay informed in Newfoundland? Like, what, how do people know about, like, the issues that are affecting their community and stuff like that? Because I imagine it's quite different. And do you guys, like, have a role in that? I guess this was part of the question.
Yeah. I mean, I'm, like, a Twitter addict, but I know, like, the majority of people are not on Twitter. We have, like, CBC, but there's also NTV here, which is, like, our news station, privately run, like, pretty corporate. There's, and they also do, like, they show, like, Survivor, but they have their own, like, news program. And then we also have VOCM, which was started by, like, super rich people in St. John's, but it stands for Voice of the Common Man. And that is, like, a radio station that a lot of people listen. And in the morning, they have this thing called Open Line, and people, like, can call in and talk about, like, issues that they're facing. And that, I would say, like, a lot of people, like, around the Bay, a lot of, like, the older generation listen to that a lot.
That's, like, the call-in show.
And I'm, like, scared to call in. I don't know. Yeah, you gotta call in offline.
You've,
like,
never called
9
in?
9 to 12. I have. The host is, like, hardcore. He will not put up your bullshit. I should call it more.
And do they pay much attention to your efforts, your organizing efforts? Does that tend to get coverage?
Sometimes. I would say, like, Tent City is getting a lot of coverage. And, like, one nice thing about St. John's, it's, like, if there's a protest, like, you'll probably get some media attention. Because, like, there's not that much news happening. But, and, like, when, so when we sent, like, the letter to our members, someone did leak it to the press. So we're that important that, like, our theft made the news. But I feel
great.
Like, personally, like,
you, all these press releases, you need all this coverage on really important issues. And yeah, you end up getting a nice article written with the one memo you wish they hadn't read.
Yeah.
But it's just hard to get coverage like that, period. So I don't think it's just because there's nothing going on. I think you guys are doing something meaningful that is hitting a note with people, and they're forced to cover it. Because, I mean, 200 members and a population of, like, 200,000? What? Because you're like, it's not small. Yes, it is, Carrie. I'm sorry. This is where my Toronto center of the universe, like we come from a really big city that is small, so, like, what you're doing, it's big. You undersell yourself a lot. Like, you're telling us a lot, you're bragging to a degree, but I think you're underselling the impact that you're having there, not just you, the organization, but yeah. Let me just look through my notes and see if there's anything else I wanted to ask about.
Well, actually, you know what? Let's just ask Carrie. I mean, do you have anything that, like, what do you want to, what do you want to share with us that we wouldn't even know to ask, I guess?
Yeah, I guess one thing I need to tell everyone about the theft, because I'm just like, it was the most horrible thing that's ever happened to me. I hope it never happens to anyone else. One of my big takeaways was, like, you know, we want to be kind to each other in organizing. Like, we need to be, like, so grateful that other people are showing up to the space. But we also, like, need to build the kind of trust that, like, we can hold each other accountable and, like, raise questions and raise concerns. Like, after the theft, you know, people kind of came up to me and they were like, oh, there was, like, this thing, like, I wanted to ask and I didn't. And, you know, maybe it could have saved us some grief. And yeah, even though, like, we can trust each other so much, having good accountability oversight processes in place is also, it also is taking care of each other, because, like, you know, our treasurer, like, they're not in a better place now because of, like, what happened. Like, I think, you know, they were dealing with their own stuff, and we didn't, like, show them care by, like, also, like, not having good oversight. Like, yeah, I think they wish, like, that didn't happen. And I wish we had, if we had looked, yeah, at what was happening closer, I don't think it would have happened. So it's, yeah, important in organizing to, oversight is also taking care of each other.
It's tough because, I mean, you know, tons of organizations, but at the end of the day, oftentimes it's just making it up as we go along, right? Like, a lot of it, you learn by failing, and that type of thing. I think what's important is being able to bounce back from that. As I said earlier, I think you guys did a great job at, you know, dealing with that, just from what you're telling me. I guess one thing I want to ask is, you know, are there other organizations in the area, or even, I'm going to use the word area to mean whatever you want. Like, it could be, you know, provincially, it could be a bit further. But, like, are there other organizations that you guys have been able to, like, work with, or, you know, show up in solidarity at your events, or vice versa?
We are definitely not doing it on our own. Like, relationships and partnerships is such a big part of what we're doing. I mean, one thing that's kind of funny is SGC is actually kind of like a background organization, I would say, to a lot of, like, things that are happening. Like, we have a Challenge Car Culture Coalition. We're involved in, like, the Anti-Racism Coalition. We're involved in the Migrant Action Collective, the Indigenous Activist Collective. We,
you're not
a lot of
be
our
able
organizing
to list them all,
is, yeah.
There's no way.
There's the, you know, Fridays for Futures, Sinchon. Like, there's a lot of stuff happening, and we're kind of trying to keep an eye on it, and, like, you know, show up for them, and, like, oh, how do we share your message? Or, like, right now, the Palestine Solidarity, YYT, like, we're kind of amplifying what they're doing. First, we're not really, we wouldn't say, like, we're organizing it, but we're trying to support that. And, yeah, try to be where the people are is our motto, I guess.
I love that. Yeah, because it's important not to double up on the work. Like, you can recognize that there's areas where there needs to be advocacy or mutual aid, but you can almost always bet there is a kernel of that work already being done, that with just a little bit more resources, attention, whatever they need, you can grow that rather than duplicating and then occasionally working together on some like-minded issue. I think this level of organizing is critical. There's probably a few organizations, I think, in Toronto that sort of fit the bill. The Workers' Action Center, OPRG, do similar things where they're trying to provide resources and the incubator. I think that's just a great analogy for it. Yeah, I really appreciate folks doing that, because you don't always get it's not always glorious work, right? Doing the background work, and it can be hectic. So many moving parts. There is a question I did want to ask about all these moving parts and coalitions to be a part of. You only have infinite amount of resources. You have a finite amount of resources. I mean, you guys are impressive in your fundraising, but still, like, that's limited. And quite often, even though you'll sit in a meeting and everyone will have great ideas, sometimes what forces the sifting through ideas rather than allowing all of them to flourish is trying to find the one that we can afford, the one we have people to volunteer for. And so sometimes really good ideas fall by the wayside just from lack of resources. How do you keep saying yes to all the different ideas and still being able to sustain yourself as an organization?
Yeah, it is challenging. We have one staff who works 20 hours a week, and kind of we try to use the motto of, like, if there's a volunteer who's like willing to kind of take it on, and we're there to support them and hopefully connect them with other people, like, we'll do that. But we don't really like initiate anything ourselves. So, you know, if a volunteer says like, I can't organize, like, for example, I was leading a food sovereignty action team and I wasn't able to keep it on anymore. And, you know, we did all this work and people did come to meetings, but without having, we didn't, if I stepped down, there was no other volunteer who was like kind of willing to like keep hosting those meetings and hosting events. So we decided like to just kind of let it go back to the wayside. And, you know, we have that information on our website, like the work we did, I think still matters. We still brought people together to talk about issues that we cared about. But sometimes, you know, you kind of have to like let things go and then there's space for new things. And we really, you know, try to like, one of the things we've talked about lately that we learned from Mutual Aid by Dean Spade was like the concept of like no masters, no flakes. So it doesn't always work, but you know, the idea, like, we're not here to tell you what to do. Like, we're here to like try and bring you together. And then like, yeah, hopefully someone will take something on and with the support of others. But ideally, if you're going to take something on, like, you're going to commit to it, because it kind of just like lets us all down if you flake out. So that's, yeah, something we've been trying to practice a little. But even myself, I want to be involved in so many things, and it's so hard to know where to put your energy. I'm trying to, personally right now, I'm trying to put my energy in like direct action. Like, I want to up the ante. So like, we're blocking an entrance, like, I'm showing up. Yeah, trying to figure out where I fit in the movement.
It's tough. There's always so many things that, there's so many things that need attention, that need people doing the work. And it's, and even when you're doing so much, it always feels like, oh, but like, I can do a bit more. I can take on this one more thing. I can do this one more thing. And then you try and then you burn out, and you know, we've been there. So I definitely know how that goes. But you know, every little bit matters here. And this sounds like I can think of so many communities in Ontario, for example, that are a similar size to like St. John's, for example, that don't have anything like this, you know? Sudbury, Thunder Bay, Sault Ste. Marie, Windsor, I don't, you know, like there's plenty of places that, like, this model needs to be repeated in. So honestly, like, I almost feel like we should bring you back some time to talk about this, because it checks off like everything that I appreciate. So I don't have much more to say, sorry. But yeah, Jessa?
I love when you're in this mood, though, Santiago. Every time we do a Blueprints, it's a totally different feel when we get out of the studio. It's inspiring to hear the work firsthand and work through some of these problems that we just collectively are trying to work through in terms of moving the movement forward. But just thank you, Carrie. Thank you for coming on and being... for persevering through all our technical difficulties and rescheduling. I appreciate that. And I even more so appreciate the work that you do. Your firebrand is appreciated over here. And yeah, all the work that's being done out in St. John's, Newfoundland. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for all your kind words. It's a nice little boost to hear. And it's great to talk to folks from other parts of so-called Canada. I'm really glad we got to connect over Twitter. And hopefully, I'd love to, anytime anyone who's listening wants to reach out and talk about our model, I'm here for it. Thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
That is a wrap on another episode of Blueprints of Disruption. Thank you for joining us. Also, a very big thank you to the producer of our show, Santiago Helu Quintero. Blueprints of Disruption is an independent production operated cooperatively. You can follow us on Twitter at BP of Disruption. If you'd like to help us continue disrupting the status quo, Please share our content, and if you have the means, consider becoming a patron. Not only does our support come from the progressive community, so does our content. So reach out to us and let us know what or who we should be amplifying. So until next time, keep disrupting.